Welcome to our podcast series on the management of patients with skin cancer. In this first episode, Dr. Evan Lipson, Associate Professor of Oncology at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore, Maryland, discusses the use of immunotherapy for patients with skin cancer who have received a kidney transplant. Dr. Lipson is an internationally recognized skin cancer and immunotherapy specialist and leads cutting-edge clinical trials for patients with melanoma and other skin cancers. As a member of the Johns Hopkins Melanoma and Cancer Immunology Programs, he focuses on evaluating novel therapies for patients with high risk or advanced disease. This podcast episode is based on a video capsule recorded previously with Dr. Lipson and can be viewed along with the slides by visiting our website at www.impactmedicom.com within the video capsule section. The direct link to the full video capsule can also be found in the episode description. Hope you enjoy it.
Hello, I'm Dr. Evan Lipson from Johns Hopkins University here in Baltimore, Maryland, and today we'll be talking about immunotherapy for kidney transplant recipients with advanced skin cancer. This is a huge unmet need, skin cancer in solid organ transplant recipients. Compared to the general population, solid organ transplant recipients get skin cancer at rates that are far over and above the general population. Cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma incidence is 65 to 250 times that of the general population. Merkel cell carcinoma is up there as well, perhaps 25 times. Melanoma, basal cell carcinoma. Not only that, but organ transplant recipients have an elevated cancer mortality risk and a decreased median cancer survival compared to the non-transplanted population. And beyond that, solid organ transplant recipients traditionally have been excluded from trials testing immune checkpoint inhibitors, partially due to the fact that they are chronically immunosuppressed and partially due to the risk of allograft rejection and loss that comes with administration of immune checkpoint inhibitor therapies to these patients. So I want to take you back about a decade and talk about a case that sort of started all of this for us. My colleague, Dr. Bill Scharfman, and I were treating some patients with melanoma back in the day. This was around about 2013 or so, 2012, right after ipilimumab was approved by the FDA here in the United States. And a gentleman came to see Dr. Scharfman, and he had had a deceased donor kidney transplant back in 2000 and developed metastatic melanoma. He received some non-immune-based therapies, temozolomide, and experienced progressive disease, platinum-based chemotherapy, same thing, progressive disease. And at some point, Dr. Scharfman said to this patient, you know, we have this other therapy now, ipilimumab, an anti-CTLA-4 drug that we could try. But the risk, of course, is that we're going to activate your immune system, not just against the cancer, but against your transplanted kidney as well. And so after much discussion, the 72-year-old patient agreed that he wanted to try that. And as it turns out, things went well. He had a partial response that lasted greater than 7 years, and his transplanted kidney was not rejected. So what this showed us was that in patients with organ transplants or kidney transplants, there is a possibility of activating the immune system only against the cancer, but leaving the allograft alone. So what that specific recipe would be was at that point unknown and is still largely unknown, although we do know some more about how we might go about treating these patients. And that's what we're going to talk about today. There are two clinical trials that were recently resulted and published in the Journal of Clinical Oncology. We led one of them here at Johns Hopkins University. This was a national study, which I'll talk about, and then I'll touch on the second one as well, led by some of my colleagues up at Harvard. Our study tested a combination of immunotherapy, nivolumab plus tacrolimus plus prednisone plus or minus ipilimumab. The idea here was to give everybody a standard immunosuppressive regimen. And for us, that was tacrolimus, which is a calcineurin inhibitor, plus low-dose prednisone at 5 milligrams daily. And once the allograft was stable on that regimen, everybody started on nivolumab at the standard dose, 480 milligrams every 4 weeks intravenously. Patients that experienced progressive disease could add ipilimumab. Everybody else, complete response, partial response, stable disease, just could continue on nivolumab for up to 96 weeks. Our primary endpoint was a composite one. We wanted to see either complete or partial response or stable disease without allograft loss at 16 weeks on nivolumab. So as I said before, the idea here is to help the immune system wake up enough, activate enough to see the tumor and either cause tumor regression or to keep it stable at the very least, and to leave the allograft alone, hence our primary composite endpoint. From an exploratory perspective, we looked at immunological changes in the tumor microenvironment, and also we looked at a marker called donor-derived cell-free DNA as an early marker of allograft rejection. And I'll talk in more detail about that in just a minute. We enrolled 8 evaluable patients on our study, cutaneous squamous cell, Merkel cell, melanoma. And unfortunately, all 8 of those evaluable patients experienced progressive disease on nivolumab, which led to our conclusion that Nivo alone here is insufficient to mediate tumor regression in these kidney transplant recipients in the setting of getting tacrolimus and prednisone for immunosuppression. Of those 8 patients, 1 patient did experience allograft loss. Interestingly, we collaborated with 2 of our colleagues, Dr. Janice Taub and Dr. Julie Stein-Deutsch in dermatopathology, and we interrogated tumor biopsies that were taken while patients were on tacrolimus and prednisone, and then again after starting the nivolumab. And despite being only on low-dose tacrolimus and low-dose prednisone, 7 out of 8 tumor biopsies obtained before administration of Nivo contained only a mild T-cell infiltrate. Tumor biopsies obtained after 4 weeks on Nivo revealed only 2 patients with a moderate CD8-positive T-cell infiltrate. So we thought we were giving patients a very mildly immunosuppressive regimen. That turned out not to be the case. After starting tacrolimus and prednisone, still we were not seeing an influx of T-cells into the tumor. There are 6 patients among those 8 who went on to get ipilimumab plus nivolumab. There were 2 patients that had some immunoactivation in their tumor seen after Nivo administration, who then went on to have a complete response to ipilimumab plus nivolumab. 2 of those patients had allograft rejection, and I'll talk in more detail about that in just a minute. Before I do that, though, I'd like to talk about the course of patient number 2, who experienced a complete response and who hung on to his allograft. He is a 69-year-old man with a kidney transplant back in 2008. Cutaneous squamous cell of the left temple had progressed through surgical resections and radiation therapy, carboplatin, cetuximab, et cetera. His photograph and the photomicrograph of the biopsy, and I think the most striking thing here is that you see at the bottom panel that singular lymphocyte, maybe there are 2 lymphocytes, but there really is a paucity of lymphocytic infiltration into this tumor prior to administration of nivolumab. So if you fast forward now to 4 weeks, this is 4 weeks into nivolumab. We biopsied his tumor, which clearly is demonstrating features of progression. And what we see is 100% residual viable tumor. Like I said, our colleagues in dermatopathology, Drs. Deutsch and Taub, looked under the microscope and unfortunately did not see any evidence of immune-mediated tumor regression. If you look at the bottom panel there, you see there are some rare lymphocytes. And so 4 weeks into Nivo, you see that the lymphocytic infiltrate is starting to sort of simmer a little bit. There are more lymphocytes there now than there were before starting Nivo, but there's still not the number of lymphs there that you would think you'd need to activate anti-tumor immunity. So at 12 weeks, this patient clearly had progressive disease, and so we started Ipi plus Nivo at that point. He was maintained on his tacrolimus and prednisone. And lo and behold, at 3 weeks into Ipi and Nivo, he is demonstrating regression, marked regression. We biopsied that. You see it's 10% RVT, residual viable tumor, so we're certainly making progress. And down at the bottom, you see all of these infiltrated cells, CD8 lymphs, CD4 lymphs. And if you just look at how much more infiltrate there is there than there was before starting ipilimumab, it's a marked change. There's really an augmented immune cell infiltrate 3 weeks into Ipi plus Nivo. Now we're 8 weeks into Ipi plus Nivo. Another biopsy was performed that showed 0% residual viable tumor. And now the tumor biopsy is replete with lymphocytes, CD8, CD4s, and he has a complete pathologic response. Fast forward to 16 months, his allograft is intact. He has a complete response. There's no evidence of any tumor anyplace. So this is the sort of response that we were hoping to see with everybody. Unfortunately, it was just one of the patients among the 8 in our trial. All right, so on to some of the markers that we looked at. As I mentioned before, one of the markers we investigated is called donor-derived cell-free DNA. And dd-cfDNA is exactly what it sounds like. It is DNA that is released from the transplanted organ, hence the donor. And you can find this in the serum of kidney transplant recipients in the non-cancer population. In fact, this is a test that is used standardly in transplant nephrology to gauge whether somebody is rejecting their allograft. So we thought perhaps for our population, patients that do have cancer that are getting immune checkpoint inhibitors, perhaps this could be an early signal that the kidney was going to reject. That, in fact, did happen in two of our patients, one of whom I'm showing you here. This is patient number six, who is a 61-year-old woman with cutaneous squamous cell. And she experienced an acute T-cell-mediated allograft rejection at 11 weeks into Ipi plus Nevo. The rise in donor-derived cell-free DNA preceded the serum creatinine rise by about 10 days. So we didn't know it at the time, but we had about 10 days warning that the graft was going to reject. This patient did have a complete response to ipi-nevo, but did end up losing the allograft. So donor-derived cell-free DNA here did demonstrate in a couple of patients that it was able to predict, or at least presage, eventual creatinine rise and allograft rejection. All right, let's move on to the second trial. This was a study that was conducted by my colleague, Dr. Glenn Hanna, and his colleagues in the Boston-Harvard system. And this is cemiplimab, also a PD-1 antibody for kidney transplant recipients. This trial did not include some of the other skin cancer types like melanoma and Merkel cell. This focused solely on cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma. His study and mine were published in the same issue of Journal of Clinical Oncology. In any case, his immunosuppression regimen was a little different than ours. The Hanna trial used an mTOR inhibitor, not a calcineurin inhibitor. And this is a big difference. Mechanistically, an mTOR inhibitor is suppresses T cells in a different way than calcineurin drugs do. And so one might expect to see differences in the way that T cells react to allografts and T cells react to tumors. In addition, that group used a prednisone taper where patients got 40 milligrams of prednisone in the days surrounding the cemiplimab injection, and then that decreased to 20 and then down to 10. And by about a week after the each infusion, each 21-day cycle infusion, the patients were back down to 10 milligrams of prednisone. In any case, the responses here, among 12 patients, there were no allograft rejections seen, and the response rate is approximately what you would expect in the general population. You can see the waterfall plot showing an overall response rate of about 45%, and then the swimmer plot there on the right side of the screen demonstrates that some of these responses were durable. I will note that there were, you can read the journal article for the specifics, but there were some patients that would go on to get other therapies and do quite well after having had immunotherapy and then moving on to something else. That was a phenomenon that we noticed in our study as well, that perhaps the immunotherapy administered up front was perhaps priming the immune system to be more sensitive or susceptible or whatever to subsequent therapy. So that's under investigation, but interesting to think about. All right, so if you take these two studies together, what we've learned, a few things. We're still early, of course, in this, but we learned a few things. So low-dose tacrolimus plus pred plus nevo is insufficient to mediate tumor regression and prevent T-cell and antibody-mediated allograft loss. So that combination, we think, largely based on the fact that it includes tacrolimus, does not seem to be a combination that's the most successful. Having said that, adding ipilimumab to that combination can trigger durable tumor regressions, but the risk of allograft rejection does seem to increase there. So with regard to allograft rejection detection, we showed that increases in donor-derived cell-free DNA levels can precede creatinine elevations and can predict treatment-related allograft rejection a week or two down the line. So it does give you a little bit of a heads up, or you might get immunosuppression on board if that were to be the case for patient under treatment. We also learned that immunosuppression with an mTOR inhibitor and pulsed prednisone, as I was describing a bit ago, can prevent allograft rejection and does allow for immune-mediated tumor regression. So instead of tacro, using mTOR inhibitors like sirolimus or everolimus might be a better way to go. And in fact, that is being tested. Based on what we've learned from the previous trials, we have opened a new study. And in fact, we're hoping to roll this out in Canada in the weeks and months to come. But here we're using ipilimumab plus nivolumab plus sirolimus plus prednisone for kidney transplant recipients with advanced melanoma or basal cutaneous squamous or Merkel cell carcinoma. So what did we learn and what are we doing? Well, first, we're using upfront ipi plus nivo to augment anti-tumor immunity. And what we're hoping to see is that the response rates to the combination therapy are higher than what you would see with either a drug by itself. Secondly, we're using an mTOR inhibitor to preserve allograft function. This is different than what we used in the first trial, where it was tacrolimus, which is a calcineurin inhibitor. So as I showed you in the trial from Glenn Hanna and his colleagues, the mTOR inhibitor does appear to allow the allograft to continue functioning, but allow the immune system to attack cancer in the meantime. And then thirdly, we're using the donor-derived cell-free DNA elevations as a real-time indicator of whether or not the allograft is being rejected. And what we hope that will allow us to do is to administer higher levels of immunosuppression in the event that we are seeing an early sign of treatment-related allograft rejection. So as we wrap up here, I thought I might address a couple of questions that come up typically as I'm talking to oncologists around the world who are managing patients who are transplant recipients, organ transplant recipients, who are up against this issue, an advanced skin cancer. One question that comes up is, when is the appropriate time to discuss or consider administering an immune checkpoint inhibitor to a kidney transplant recipient or a transplant recipient of another organ with advanced skin cancer? The first thing I'll say is that patients often will indicate their level of risk aversion or risk tolerance. And oftentimes that can be a good way to start the conversation. And what I mean by that is that some patients will say, I would like to do everything possible to combat this cancer, even if it means I, for example, have to go back on dialysis. Similarly, there are patients with a life-sustaining transplant, like a liver or heart or lung, instead of a life-enhancing transplant, like a kidney or pancreas, that would give the same answer. Some patients will say, I know that this cancer is going to take my life. And even if it means that it might bring my demise more quickly, I still want to try an aggressive immune therapy to try to battle this cancer back, even if it means that I would lose my, you know, transplanted organ. So I think in many cases, the patient is sort of the driver of the timing of starting the therapy. Unfortunately, there really isn't a lot of literature out there about the success of other non-immune-based agents. So for example, with cutaneous squamous cell carcinoma, oftentimes we'll turn to a drug like cetuximab, or we'll use a drug like a platinum-based chemo. And every now and again, we'll see that somebody has a durable remission. But the majority of cases really don't respond very well. And when I tell patients that, oftentimes they will say, I'm really not interested in trying to kick the can down the road for 3 or 4 months. What I'm really interested in is swinging for the fences and seeing if we can get a durable anti-tumor immune response, even if it means that I'm going to have to go back on dialysis. That conversation, of course, is harder in patients that have a liver transplant or heart or lung transplant. But as I said, even there, oftentimes patients are enthusiastic about giving it a try. If patients are enthusiastic about doing that, if that's the decision after discussion with the transplant team and the patient's family on the oncology team, et cetera, then I suggest when available that a patient participate in a formal clinical trial. Those, of course, are few and far between, although we are working on that. They're perhaps becoming more and more common. But if a formal clinical trial is not available to participate in, then what is the approach? Well, the short answer is we don't know for certain what the approach should be. But based on the data that we've described today, what we are typically doing in an off-the-shelf manner in clinic is the following. The first is that we're switching patients from whatever immunosuppression they are on to an mTOR inhibitor and low-dose prednisone. So for example, sirolimus and prednisone, 5 to 10 milligrams every day. That's based on evidence that was published in JCO that I described, Dr. Hanna and his group. So we are dealing with data that comes from a very small group of patients, but it really is the best data we have thus far. So we switch everybody to an mTOR and low-dose prednisone, and we make sure that the allograft is safe. Once we have done that, we give patients a week or two on that therapy to make sure they aren't rejecting their allograft just as a result of having switched their immunosuppression. And when possible, we are starting anti-PD-1 monotherapy by itself. We are not using combination therapy, despite the results that I described to you from our trial looking at ipilimumab plus nivolumab. At this point, we've seen enough success with anti-PD-1 monotherapy, especially in the cutaneous squamous cell set, where we are keeping the risk as low as possible and using that in combination with mTOR inhibition and prednisone. And beyond that, when we can, we monitor donor-derived circulating free DNA weekly for the first about 12 weeks or so, and then perhaps less frequently thereafter. So as I described just a bit ago, what we saw was that donor-derived cell-free DNA elevation can predict allograft rejection, or at least precede the elevation in serum creatinine, which might give a window for the administration of higher dose immunosuppression to try to protect a rejecting allograft. So we certainly do not have all of the answers in this space, by no means. But what we do know at this point is what I have described to you during this seminar. And that has informed the way that we treat patients as a standard of care. Having said that, though, as I said before, when possible, we strongly encourage participation in formal clinical trials. Thank you for joining us for the presentation today. I hope you have found this valuable. I'm Dr. Evan Lipson from Johns Hopkins University. Thanks again.